What ho, Mr. Bermese.
What ho, Stevie. It is a day of mix-ups.
Trek tropes.
Timey-wimey-ness. Trek tropes. Who's where? Who's what? The temporal Cold War.
Well, all of the good stuff. This gives you this so much fun in classic Trek lore in this episode. Love it.
It was great. This was a classic. You're like, the adventure's about to begin. Oh, wait, let's go traipsing through time. But also pushing things forward a bit.
Indeed. Well, welcome to Set Phasers, a highly logical Star Trek podcast. Shall we start the show?
Oh, yeah. Let's start the show.
Set Phasers, a highly illogical Star Trek podcast.
Welcome in.
Yes, today's welcome into Set Phasers.
Today's stardate is stardate. Well, it could be stardate 154421.0,
but it could also be stardate ?
Because there are so many time zones. And
at first, I was like, "Oh, I'll try to write down all the different time the stardates that." And then I was like, "No, there's too many. They're bouncing around too quickly." But yes, we're talking about Discovery Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange, and strange it was. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It kind of was a halt in the forward momentum of the hunt, but it did get us, we get to grow a little closer with Michael and Rayner, and Stamets had purpose. It was great.
I think we needed this episode to have everyone love Rayner and have Rayner get on board to the Discovery way of doing things.
Indeed. Yes. We should run it down.
It's time to run it down. Can you run it down for me? What just happened? Can you run it down for me?
Let's run it down then. Okay, we begin 15 hours before the bug was placed on poor Adira's sleeve, and we find out that Maul and Locke made a deal with some petty baddie boy of some sort with some latinum, and they give him the latinum in a bag, and he's like, "You're supposed to stack it, meh, 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 meh." And they go, "Oh, we didn't have time to get the thing that we needed," and he tries to double cross him, but just as he's about to double cross him in a classic Princess Bride sort of iocane powder situation, He starts to cough and realizes he's been poisoned, and they poisoned him with a poison that smugglers like him have used on Emerald Chain people. It's obviously a kind of vengeance for Maul and her two stints in Emerald Chain gangs. But they get the device and he dies, and Locke is wondering, "Maul, is this plan gonna work? Is the walls are closing in, all these people trying to find us?" And Maul's like, "Listen, we got to do this in order to get ahead of Discovery and the Federation and find the progenitor's tech, and then there'll be no more running and we'll be free." And he's like, "The free sounds good." And then they make out. Meanwhile, back on Discovery, I guess 15 hours into the future after this bug is delivered, Adira and Gray are talking post-breakup and they're going to get together, and the spider comes out of the uniform and goes crawling along the bulkhead. And then Adira sort of notices something is funky, but then gets a call from Stamets about the deuterium manifold and has to go. And on the bridge of Discovery, they've gotten to these coordinates that they got from the Trill Janal, and it's empty. There's nothing there. It's just a whole lot of space, which space is full of. And the bridge crew tries to make some suggestions about Maul and Locke and the space and what we should do, and they send some dot-outs to do some deeper digging, only to discover that there's still not much there, but maybe if they go deeper. Stamets shuts down a suggestion from Lieutenant Commander Reese, which causes Michael to say, "Let's have a discussion in our ready room about that." They head to the ready room. Meanwhile, Stamets is in engineering and sees the little spider as it goes into the spore drive, but that is just as the argument discussion in the ready room is over and Michael and Rainer attempt to transport back and the lights flicker and the transporters don't work and then Michael and Rainer are locked out of comms. And then they discover that while they're still in the ready room where they were when they were talking, having tried to transport away, they're still on Discovery, but it's not Discovery as they know it. It's Discovery in the past when it was following the Red Angel through the time warp thing into the future. It was actually the end of season 2, if my recollection serves. And so we realize we're in a timey-wimey and transporter malfunction episode. They have no idea how they got there until Rainer remembers, oh, hey, from the time war, the time war, we had these things called time bugs. They're Krenim chronophages. Leftover, you can still get them on the black market, and basically what they do is they disable a ship by sending it bouncing back and forth through its timeline so that it can't do anything, and it could last for weeks, could last for months, who knows how long. So Rhys was right when he suggested that Mom and Locke were perhaps onto them and had planted something on them and were trying to get ahead and slash follow them. Meanwhile, Stamets is in sickbay because that's where he was when, oh, they've jumped again, and this is when they were fighting. Poof. This is when it gets confusing all the time, you want me. Stamets is in sickbay. He's being treated by Culber. He's about to be put into a coma, but he is also existing out of time because of his tardigrade DNA. So he knows that, no, please don't put me under. I'm the only one who can save us. It was the day of Osira attack. That's where they are. Okay, so they're just bouncing around. They don't know how long they have in each timeline. It's 5 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes. The day Osira attacks, they attempt to make it down to engineering to get, Michael and Rainer attempt to make it down to engineering to get to Stamets to help get back to their real timeline. They are attacked by Emerald Chain folks in helmets, thankfully, but they have to preserve the timeline. Those are the temporal prime directives. But as they're fighting a bunch of these people, they are overwhelmed and saved by none other than Jet Reno. Michael goes to hide in order to not disturb the timeline, because Reno in this past time wouldn't know who Rainer was. Rainer and Reno. Reno and Rainor have a discussion, and Rainer introduces himself as Locke, but they basically part ways and all is well. And then they jump again. So, time jump. K-Sara Sara is playing. Now we get our creepy vision of the future. The ship is empty. It seems like it's in cobwebs. Everything's all jacked up. They go to the bridge and no one is on board. And they speak to Zora. And Zora asks, is that really you, Captain, or is this a dream? And the captain says, no, this is not a dream. Now we find out that they've jumped into the future. The crew died decades ago in 3218, 30 years into the future from when our story takes place. Apparently, in this timeline, the progenitor's tech fell into the wrong hands, and everyone died. And Michael asks Zora to show what's outside of the view screen, and they see the Federation headquarters absolutely destroyed. The chronophage was enacted too late. The Breen, who were mentioned in the last episode, or the episode before that? No, the last episode.
I feel like they've been mentioned in every episode.
I think they're really trying to set up the Breen as the baddies. They launched a devastating attack because they had the progenitor tech, which I now would like to call P-Tech because it's easier. But Zora does help them discover that there is a pattern to the time jumps. It follows a conical wave. They're about to jump. Zora asks them to set things right, and they jump forward to a place where Stamets is in the engineering. He's talking to Reno. Reno actually sort of discerns that maybe Stamets is in some sort of time loop, and then says, hey, no, I'm just joking. Michael and Rainer finally find Stamets. Stamets clears engineering. He knows about the bug. He knows what the bug is. He knows it's in the distribution system, but he knows it can't just be pulled out, because if it's improperly removed, terrible, terrible, terrible things could happen to many, many timelines for a long time. So Stamets needs the conical data that they got from Zora. He gets the conical data. He's about to do the reset, but then it doesn't work. So they say they're going to meet at every reset on deck 13. Stamets meets them again in the next jump, says he needs a chronoton stabilizer, which can only be found in 32nd century, in the new century time. In the new century time, hollow things, which Michael has one in her room, so she has to go to her quarters. They only have 8 minutes. When they get there, when Michael gets to the room, Grudge is on her bed. So I kind of knew Book was going to walk in. Didn't realize he was going to walk in shirtless and sweaty, trying to make kissy kissy. A real Book, I like the way you look kind of moment. Do we have Book, I like the way you look jam?
Yep.
Because I did. Hey, baby. Are you stuck in a time loop? Do you need me to help you get out of it by giving you a kiss and telling you that you got this, Michael, in my British voice? Well, you do, baby. See you in the future, or the past, or whatever. Yeah. Forgot about the Book voice. It takes a lot out of you.
So had I.
Yes. So Michael manages to get the fluid that she needs. Book pops back in from the gym. Awkward moment, because at this point they're still together. They discuss, you know, change is hard, and then engage in a little bit more kissy kissy.
Kissy kissy.
This episode has a couple of kissy kissy moments. Stamets, meanwhile, makes the thing. He gives it to Michael to put on the bug. It's some sort of defense mechanism is on the bug, though. It's like a temporal shield, and they're not able to do it, so they go to yet another time jump. And that's where they meet again, and they realize the bug's temporal pocket is moving ultra fast. So they can't break into it, because if they did, whatever would be in it would be moving much faster, and it would age super fast and die. But they can get into it if they take the ship to maximum warp and break the warp bubble, because then the relativity of everything on the ship would be going super duper fast, and they could have a few seconds to try and take the bug out with Stamets' device. It's pretty sciencey stuff, but they said relativity, which, you know, always makes me happy. If they break the bubble and deactivate the bug in the same cycle, then before the jump, then nothing that happened then will remain permanent in the timeline. So it is they got to do it. But they are currently on the Discovery when Lorca is the captain. Lorca. However, Lorca's off the ship, so no guest star. Would have been nice. Could have done it for me. I would have liked it. Who's got the bridge? Who's got the con? It's Arium, our sadly deceased Arium, who had faith in the heart. Michael is still a mutineer at that time. They have 13 minutes left. They have to do all the things. Michael has to go to the bridge and convince the crew to go to maximum warp and then break the warp bubble, which would kill them all. But if it's a timeline thing, then they'll be fine. On the way to the bridge, she runs into Linus. Linus says, hey, you look good in red. But then Linus gets off the turbo lift and Michael runs into Michael. And while Captain Burnham tries to explain to Mutineer Burnham that she's from the future, the usual Star Trek thing, we're on the other side of that, where you're like, we can see that Mutineer Burnham does not believe Captain Burnham. So they begin to fight, and it is a knockdown, drag out fight of epic proportion. But Captain Burnham does not want to harm Mutineer Burnham, who she was talking to Raynor recently about in the time jumps, about how hard it was to be a mutineer. Able to overwhelm Mutineer Burnham with the Vulcan neck pinch, knock her out, tell her, hey, just hang in there, don't give up. Meanwhile, Stamets is able to clear engineering once again, just by saying that he's in a bad mood. He and Raynor have to have it out a little bit, a little heart to heart, not to be so curmudgeonly with one another. And Raynor offers to help and drop his gruff candor routine. And Raynor reminds Stamets that he's not alone, even though this progenitor tech might be terrifying to him. Michael, meanwhile, goes to the bridge. She is accosted by everyone who does not trust her. In her hair is different, and she's in a red suit, and it's from the future, and they all hate her. Michael gets to the bridge. No one is trustful of her. Arium is sort of being neutral, but oh well. Detmer, Reese, everyone is sort of like, no, you're a mutineer. You can't be on the bridge right now. We're going to shoot you. Michael has to relate details that she knows everybody, that to explain that she's from the future, and eventually she has to relay that Arium died. Doesn't explain that it was in the fight for control, because no one's ready to hear about all that. But when they all say Aaron wouldn't do that, Aaron's like, I would have done that. And so she's able to convince the crew to go along with her shenanigans scheme. The ship goes to maximum warp. Rayner and Stamets are ready in engineering to tackle this time bug situation. But then old Michael and just Lieutenant Reese show up, and they've got phasers, and Michael can't get down there in time to talk to herself. So Rayner's got to go up there and talk to her. And Rayner is able to talk Michael down by saying, listen, I know what it's like to lose people, et cetera, et cetera. He's able to make a connection, which is what this episode is all about. The connection is made. And so Michael's able to back down. So Rayner puts the device on the time bug. The time bug gets fried after they open the warp bubble. They go back to the present. They've only lost 6 hours. Michael and Rayner talk. Rayner admits, you know what? The crew, knowing the crew did help, because being able to talk to Reese about how he loved the curves of the old ships and talking to Michael was how he was able to get them to talk them down in orbit to be able to get back to the present. And Michael admits, hey, listen, familiarity can lead to complacency, but that's how discovery works. They've traveled through time many times, and that's how they do it. Meanwhile, Stamets is in engineering. He's looking at the fried time bug. He's like, man, oh man, that's weird. Back up on the bridge, the crew is discussing, you know, the past. Captain Michael explaining how hard it was to get them to come over to her side in the past. Rayner comes back on deck after having his injury attended to, because he put his hand in the time bug time place. And he admits to Rayner that Rayner was right and made, not Rayner, to Reese, that he was right and he made a good call. And the dots who were out there searching in the 6 hours that were lost did find a warp signature that matches the ship of Maul and Locke. And so, despite the fact that we spent this entire episode bouncing back and forth through time, the hunt is still on, though now Discovery is behind Maul and Locke. But they will find the P-TECH. Or who will find the P-TECH and do what with what? And will the Breen be involved? We'll find out possibly on the next episode. But that's it. Let's chat about that.
I say, darling, let's do a quick chat about that.
Yes, let's do.
I don't know how to start chatting about this without breaking into Easter eggs. But basically, we got transporter issues. We got timey-wimey.
Yes, transporter mishap, timey-wimey, and so many throwbacks to different episodes on Disco, different times of Disco. There's so many things to throw back to.
We got the Lorca period, quite possibly my least favorite but most alluring period of Discovery. Lorca. Ooh.
We have the future when we throw forward to like that, you know, lost episode of Short Treks with Calypso. Mm-hmm. We go back to San Francisco pre-Disco, which is the first, I believe this is the earliest period we've ever seen in mm-hmm. Disco history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gosh, we have so many things. We get a little reference to, I'm throwing forward to Easter eggs, so I don't want to ruin it, but yeah, there's a lot.
I think we can just sum up the chat to say, Rayner had to learn an important lesson about friendship and command. He learned it by having to travel through the tortured past of Discovery and meeting young mutineer Michael and having to have a face-to-face with his captain before she was a captain, when she was as troubled as perhaps he is now, right? Remember that Michael was the one who learned about the Vulcan hello and started the war with the Klingons and was having trouble leaving the war footing behind, same as Rayner. So they're like, on this even footing, he needed to see that Michael, not this composed Michael who's been through everything and has now attained a centered Vulcan Zen state. And also Stamets being out of time was useful in this regard, getting to see Stamets. And anyway, it's a cool element. And I think there are things in here that maybe were seeds for future episodes too, considering what the progenitor tech pretends to be able to do. And it was great to see Arium. And heartbreaking.
Interesting theory about some progenitor tech and what this might be able to do for us.
Ooh, like you that. Got tinfoil? Okay, let's go.
No. But, progenitor tech, I think, you know, Maul and Locke are keen to use it to bring people back from the dead. And in fact, we used a time bug and sort of brought Arium back from the dead.
Oh, yes, so indeed.
A nice little parallel.
Yeah, the stories, as they say, the stories rhyme. the timeline, the plot lines rhyme. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. We go immediately now to the Easter Egg Desk, as we always do, with Stevie. Stevie, how are you today?
Well, hi there, Aki. I'm well. It's good to be back on the Easter Egg Desk. One of my favorite desks to be behind, as you well know.
There are... it's a butcher's dozen, which is in reference to bread and not eggs. But, you know, if you have a dozen eggs and then you... butcher's dozen, 13. Anyway, there's 13? Loads of them. I don't know. There's a lot of them. So we have the Red Angel. So right before the opening credits, Burnham and Rayner find themselves on a damaged version of Discovery, stuck in a wormhole. And she points out that the person flying ahead of them is the Red Angel, in which we see a moment between season two finale, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, and the season 3 premiere, That Hope Is You Part 1. And while this is a flashback of Burnham, it's also technically something we never saw in the timeline of the show.
Yes, we only saw the crash.
Yeah, so we're getting... cool. I love that we're sort of going back in time and we're like two episodes that we have not seen. So this is just flashing back in time. Just, you know, we're cognizant of the fact that we're seeing snapshots of Discovery versus, you know, going back to particular episodes. Anyway, the San Francisco Fleet Yards, as I noticed, we see that Burnham says we're in dry dock. We see the Golden Gate Bridge. And though the Star Trek 2009 reboot movie floated the idea that some parts of starships could be built on the ground, it would appear that this was the case with Discovery 2, since the ready room at this moment is incomplete. But it was the earliest moment in history that we've seen for the USS Discovery, which I quite liked. We also have the battle of control, the battle with control. And even Burnham references that. And she was like, oh, that was a tough one.
A great understatement for that.
Absolutely. And this is referencing Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, in which Discovery and the Enterprise join forces to fight off the Section 31 fleet that had been possessed by the AI known as Control. Which is cool because that... that moment sparks the events of the very first episode for Strange New Worlds, which we love. We have the time bug. Now, Rayner notices that this is from the... this is left over from the Temporal War, referencing Star Trek Enterprise, which I thought you might have loved.
I've got free.
From the 30th century, about 200 years before the events of Discovery Season 3. So then we move on to Stamets' tardigrade DNA. And I find it cool that, like, you know, while you notice that Rayner and Burnham are maintaining their uniforms, Stamets jumps back into whatever he was wearing at that point because, you know, he has tardigrade DNA and he lives outside of regular time. So I thought that was quite cool. We have Reno's Vesper Martini. So Rayner and Burnham are on Discovery during the moment that Osira attacks the ship, which is referencing That Hope Is You Part 2, which we've mentioned. And Reno is fighting off a few baddies, and Rayner has to pretend he's a crew member. Reno asks him to buy her a Vesper Martini, ice cold, when everything is back to normal, which is fun for me because a Vesper Martini was popularized by Ian Fleming in 1953. However, the Pina Lillet, this is my bartending thing, that it was used to make a Vesper Martini, it went out of production in the 1980s. So it's a nice little sort of nod to the fact that Reno's Vesper Martini is probably the most accurate thing that, you know, we're certainly never going to experience that. Bartenders at the moment often substitute in Lillet Blanc, which is kind of like it's winey. Mm-hmm. Anyway, love that.
I know you do, yes.
We have Zora and the
Future. I
love being
made out of the martini.
I would love to. That would be fun. Have a drink for... I'm not that creative with the drinks, but I like to make them. So we have Zora and the Future. We mentioned that in the 2018 Short Treks episode, Calypso. So, you know, we flash forward into the future and everyone's off Discovery. We're not entirely sure why. And now we suddenly get a bit of an insight into why that might have been. So that's kind of cool. We don't know if, you know, and now we're like, is that future accurate or is this going to be like an alternate timeline if Michael and the crew of Discovery save the day? We have the warp bubble's purpose. Now, I don't remember the warp bubble being mentioned for quite a long time, but in the original 1964 pilot, The Cage, the original series, Navigator Tyler says, "The time barrier has been broken," and Captain Pike refers to warp factors as time warp factors. But we've never, you know, I've never really sort of heard us be aware particularly of how the warp bubble protects us from the effect of relativity, as Burnham points out. So I thought that was kind of cool, like, you know, explaining some of the pseudoscience that goes into this.
Absolutely, yeah.
We obviously have Burnham fighting Burnham in her earlier season one self. And I think there was a note that her fighting style, I think she has sort of maintained that through the series and the particular martial arts style there. Now for me, this was quite cool. Burnham uses the Vulcan nerve pinch on her younger self. Now, interestingly, mm-hmm. the nerve pinch was invented by Leonard Nimoy for the original series, The Enemy Within. And within that episode, the nerve pinch was used on a duplicate version of the captain, Captain Kirk, on Evil Kirk.
Yes, The Enemy Within.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the first Vulcan nerve pinch? Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's fun is that the nerve pinch is actually what got Burnham busted in the first place back in the Vulcan Hello when she used it on Captain Georgiou, which put her on the path.
Yeah.
That resulted in this entire series of Trek. So it's a small Trekkie plot device, but its impact is clearly a lot bigger than a little tap on the shoulder.
That's right.
It's a little bit fun.
A tap on the shoulder.
A tap on the shoulder. Now, if you are into doubles and you want to kind of know how many, there have been several. We had, obviously, let's not forget Star Trek Nemesis, where Picard has to fight a younger version of himself, not necessarily a clone, but not a time clone. We have TNG Time Squared, season 2, episode 13, where Picard is, we discover a Picard in a shuttlecraft that is 6 hours in the future and is talking gibberish. Do you remember that one? That was a good one. We have original series Mirror Mirror, season 2, I forget which one that was. Transporter Mishap sees Kirk and his away team get swapped with the Mirror Terran universe. That was the first time we'd sort of seen the Terran universe, which obviously led to Discovery's, you know, entire season battling with the Terrans. We have the original series Undiscovered Country movie, Shapeshifter, that Kirk, I believe, kisses in an earlier thing, and he says, "I can't believe I kissed you." And the response was, "It must have been your lifelong ambition," which is quite an insight into his character, because obviously he loves himself.
Yes.
We have TNG Second Chances, season 6, episode 24. Riker encounters his double on a planet from a transporter mishap, and a copy of him was left on that planet. And that's probably one of the few times that a double has continued to exist. Like, Tom Riker goes off and continues his life within Trek lore.
I believe he joins the Maquis. It causes some trouble in the Dominion War.
Yeah, but most of the other doubles either die or return to their timeline. There is Strange New Worlds, Equality of Mercy, where Pike meets a double of his. Mm-hmm. Lower Decks, the double trouble with Rutherford. We have Voyager. We have quite a few. I think there's season 2 Deadlock. There's season 4. There's the episode Demon. So Janeway and Seven. And then there's Course Oblivion, where the entire Voyager is duped, if you like. And in DS9, you'll love this, Whispers and Visionary. In both cases, Miles O'Brien has to kill off his own double.
Yes. Poor Miles. Truly the most important person in Starfleet.
I know. Certainly Starfleet one of the longest running members, anyway.
I mean, the guy went through everything.
Yeah.
He did. He did it all.
True, but I think Worf has appeared in more Star Trek episodes. Or Michael Dorn, I should say.
Is that true? I guess that's true, because Miles hasn't been in any of the new stuff.
There's something on with Whoopi.
With Whoopi.
With Whoopi.
Worf with Whoopi.
Worf with Whoopi. That would be a good podcast. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that is all the Easter eggs that I have. And you see, there were a lot.
You went deep. I am truly impressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Aki, it is back to you in the studio.
Thank you very much, Stevie. Appreciate it as always. Let's move on to quotable moments.
Quotable moments.
And there's a few. I'm particularly, obviously, taken with how Stamets, he's been clearing the bridge every time by saying that there's a spore outbreak and that the spores will grow mushrooms on their lungs and everyone runs out. But in the final time jump, when he doesn't have time to do all that, he just walks onto the bridge and says, "All right, I am very grumpy, just absolutely irate, and I need to be left alone." And people just pick up their things and go, because Stamets is so prickly.
That was my favorite, too. "All right, I'm very grumpy, just absolutely irate, and I need to be left alone." I wish I could say that. Every time listen. I just need to be left alone.
Listen, I'm in a bad mood and I need you all to go. There are some great, I forget what we call our Reno quips. Reno
jets, jabs.
Oh, jets.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Jets, jabs.
You have to do the, you have to point a lot. Let's try it again.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Jets, jabs.
Did I do it right? I don't know if there might
you
be a little delay.
Right.
So I,
you
okay.
Right. That was great.
Yes. Well, I got jabbed by Jet. Obviously, the time when Samus is trying to figure out how to what timeline he's in, and Reno leans over and says, "Are you stuck in a time loop right now, Samus? Just messing with you. Don't bury your head in the abstract for too long. You'll turn into a Rothko painting."
Wow. That was a good one. And then, I had one. Yes. Jet's jab as well while we're on it. Don't worry, we'll get out of this, and so will your face.
Oof. Wow. Just the most brusque kindness. Oh, yes, and right after that, when he says he owes her one, or right before, she says, "Buy me a drink at Red's, Vesper Martini, ice cold." And Rainer says, "Only way to drink it." And I thought the episode would end with him finally going to Red's and making a friend.
Reno. Interesting.
Reno and Rainer, not a duo I want to have to say a lot, but Reno and Rainer having ice cold Vesper Martinis would be a cute button.
Yeah. Well, I do have... Yes. Oh, any more?
I have the one... Stamets going absolutely crazy when he says about the time bug. "If improperly removed, incalculable timelines might converge at once, ripping every molecule around us in infinite directions over and over again for eternity." Was pretty great.
Mm. Well, I have a little bit of news.
Oh my God, let's go to news.
News from around the galaxy.
Well, there has been a Star Trek mystery that was solved this week.
Oh.
Indeed. In 1977, the first shooting model of the USS Enterprise in the Star Trek original series went missing. Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum. Yes.
The 3-foot model used for the first Star Trek pilot, and in fact for the credits used for the entire series, had been given to Roddenberry after it was replaced by an 11-foot model. Mm. And that larger model is in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
Or is it in the Air and Space Museum, or is that the same thing? I've definitely seen it.
Smithsonian has a number of museums, and I think it's in the Air and Space one.
Got it. Then, in fact, I have seen that one. But the 3-foot model would sit, or used to sit, on Gene Roddenberry's desk until it went missing after being loaned to an effects house during the making of Star Trek: The Motion Picture. Now, the model appeared to have gone up for auction on eBay late last year, so it had gone missing from, I guess, 1980 through till 2023.
40-some-odd years, yeah.
Yeah. And it was quickly taken down, and at that point, Eugene Roddenberry Jr. was working to get the model authenticated and returned to the family, which has now happened.
Wonderful.
Delightful. The model's return was facilitated by Heritage Auctions, and late last fall, an individual discovered the long-lost model, brought it to them for authentication, and Heritage reached out to Roddenberry to coordinate the return of the Enterprise, and quote-unquote, I love this, they said... "One of our team of experts concluded it was the real thing. We contacted Rod because we wanted to get back the model back to dry docks where it belonged."
Very cute.
Very cute. Well, that's the only news that I have, so I shall throw it back to you in the studio.
Wow, I did a mystery solved.
A mystery solved. I love that. 40-year mystery. Yes. Solved.
A cold case. Well, there's nothing left to do. We'll move on to next time.
Next time. On Set Phasers.
Next time on Set Phasers, we'll move on to episode 5 of season 5, the old 5-5, which is entitled Mirrors, which I can't even imagine what that will be, considering how mirrorable this episode was. In any case, we hope you enjoyed the episode. If you liked it and would like to hear more episodes of our podcast, you can get them wherever podcasts are found.
Indeed you can. And you can do check out our YouTube. My YouTube game is now quite strong. YouTube strong. We have all of our episodes there. You can listen to us as a podcast on YouTube Music, or you can watch our episodes. Please do. It's quite fun. We have some shorts where I take little clips of the best bits. And of course, you can join our Patreon community at patreon.com/setphasers and join our community chats. We are due a Zoom hang soon. Yes. A big shout out to Chad and Eric for their long-term and long-time support. We love you guys. And yes, do join us there to be part of the crew.
What else? We're on social media, where you can see the quite strong YouTube game of Stevie in Reels version at Set Phasers Podcast. And there's a Facebook group that might also be called Set Phasers Podcast.
Yeah, leave the Facebook group. I haven't done too much of that.
Yeah, stick with YouTube and Instagram and Patreon. Come to the Patreon already.
Well, that is it from me. I'm Stevie Manns. Until next time.
And I am you from the future. And this has been Set Phasers, a highly illogical Star Trek podcast.
Computer. End program.